Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Welcome to the RTC Weekly Download. I'm your host, Jim Dolan, and thank you for listening. Before Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune, radio had game shows too. One of the tougher shows to play was Information Please, and we have an example of that now with guest Will Rogers Jr. from 1943.
Wake up, America. Time to stump the expert. Each week at this time, the H.J. Heinz Company, makers of the famous 57 varieties, gives you Information Please. A quartet of experts is on hand to answer your questions. Send them to Information Please at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York City. We may edit them a bit, and in case of similarity, you'll have to accept our judgment of who shall be paid. If we use your question, the H.J. Heinz Company sends you $10 in war stamps, plus a set of the 12-volume Britannica Junior Encyclopedia. If we muff the question, you get $57 in war bonds and stamps, plus a 24-volume set of the regular Encyclopedia Britannica. All questions remain our property. Information Please is presented under the supervision of Dan Golenpohl. And now, our master of ceremonies, the book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman.
Constitution Hall in Washington, D.C. As you may know, Information Please has been engaged lately on a bond-selling tour. We interrupt that tour temporarily to do our part in helping the Red Cross campaign, which begins today. This appearance for the Red Cross is contributed by the H.J. Heinz Company and Dan Golenpohl, our producer. And it means, very simply, that every person in this gigantic and filled to capacity auditorium has made a personal contribution to the Red Cross tonight. Now tonight, Information Please, spontaneous and completely unrehearsed as usual, offers as its panel of experts the composer and pianist Oscar Levin, the genial essayist John Kieran, the learned versifier Franklin P. Adams, and as our guest, the baby congressman from California, the Honorable Will Rogers, Jr. Now, our first question is an off-the-record question, gentlemen. Some time ago, we asked this one, and you muffed it, as is often your pleasant custom. Here's the off-the-record question. Who is the president of the American Red Cross? We have two eager hands. Mr. Levin.
President Roosevelt.
Very good. You have learned something since last time.
I knew that a long time ago.
Maybe you weren't on when we...
I wasn't on.
Oh, that's it.
Mr. Swope rehearsed me in that 4 years ago.
Yes, Franklin Delano Roosevelt is the president of the Red Cross, and, of course, the president of the United States is always the president of the Red Cross. Now, how about this one? This comes from Mrs. Dan E. Edgerton of Portland, Maine. Gentlemen, what would you feed each of these real or fictitious animals? Let's get two out of three. What would you feed Daniel Webster?
The devil.
No, this Daniel Webster is an animal and not a man. Daniel Webster. Mr. Kieran? Mr. No. Rogers? Mr. Rogers, there's a look of intelligence on your face.
Give me a minute. Whiskey.
Pardon?
Whiskey.
No, that's just a pleasant thought that might come to you.
That's the real Webster.
No, Daniel Webster. Daniel Webster was the frog in Mark Twain's story. All the experts are shaking their heads now in shame. He's the frog and the jumping frog of Calaveras County by Mark Twain, and you'd feed him, Mr. Kieran, what?
Well, you wouldn't feed him shot, which the trickster did.
That's right.
You'd feed him flies.
Yes, flies or other insects. You did get that, but a little late, didn't you, Mr. Kieran? How about this one? What would you feed Elsie? Elsie, Mr. Kieran.
I would, I'd give her clover and silage and maybe a grain mash now and then.
Yes, why
Elsie
would you
the
do
cow.
That? She's a cow. Belongs to whom?
Well, it used to be Borden Company.
A Borden Company.
Yes, I think so. You don't still insist on whiskey, do you, Mr. Rogers?
No.
How about this? Might get milk punch. How about this one? What would you feed Archie? Archie? Mr. Adams.
Type.
Type? I don't get it. Oh, you mean Mr.
Marcus's.
John Marquis's, yeah. Archie.
Yes, Archie the cockroach.
Yeah. You'd feed him type? Why would you feed him type?
Because that's what he ate.
He didn't eat type, did he? Well, you might feed him type, but I should think you'd feed him what if he were a cockroach?
Flies.
Oh, you don't feed cockroaches flies.
If they're big enough.
I don't water know. And stuff that doesn't go down the sink.
I should think you'd feed him cockroach poison.
That's not
humane.
Not
if you wanted him to live.
No, but then you wouldn't want the cockroaches to live ordinarily.
You would Don Marquis's cockroach.
That's right. But I think you would feed a cockroach poison. Not to call that wrong. And send $57 in war bonds and stamps to Mrs. Edgerton and a set of the Britannica. How about this one from Blake McElwain of Pensacola, Florida? What's the military significance of each of these symbols? M1. M1. M as in Mary. Mr. Rogers.
M1? I'm I think it's the light tank.
Military intelligence.
No.
I made that up.
Rogers says
it's the light tank, I believe.
Apparently not. The Garand rifle, unless I'm mistaken.
Oh.
Is that right?
Right.
You're losing your constituency pretty quickly, Rogers.
That's why a congressman won't appear on the show.
Don't worry, you're doing all right, as compared with what I can imagine other congressmen might do. I'd name them for a trifle. How about G2? Oh, we have three hands. Mr. Adams.
General Staff.
G2, General Staff?
G2 is the General Staff or the intelligence part of the General Staff.
Adams, the intelligence part. Yes, now you're talking.
That's part of the General Staff.
Intelligence Service. What were you going to say, Mr. Curran?
I was going to say that's correct. G is divided into 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, I believe, of which 2 is the intelligence department.
That's what Mr. Adams meant. I'll call that right.
And you can further subdivide that. G is for General Staff. S is for anything lower than a General Staff with the same numbers.
100%.
I can add to that. GI means a haircut, general inspection.
How about M17? M again, as in Mary, M17.
St. Patrick's Day.
It's a wild guess. M17, Mr. Levant?
Is that a plane?
No.
Well, why did you ask me?
Mr. Rogers?
Well, I'll take another shooting guess at it. I would say it is some type of an armored vehicle.
Well, it's an Army tank destroyer.
No, well, they run from M10 on up, and I don't know how high they've been going.
Well, however they run, they escape you slightly, Mr. Rogers. It's an Army tank destroyer, and that sends another $57 in war bonds and stamps to Mr. McElwain and a set of the Britannica. How about this one from T.J. McGraw of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania? Complete the quotation about a name. A quotation in which the phrase "a name" appears. Mr. Rogers?
What's in a name?
Attaboy. Yeah, you got all those voters back, Mr.
The name
Rogers.
Is as good as its bond.
Mr. Kieran, what were you going to say?
Just that.
How does it go on?
A rose.
A name by any other rose. Name
would that which we call a rose.
That which we call a rose by any other name would smell as sweet. Mr. Rogers, do you happen to know where that comes from?
Why ask me out of
that's
all these?
Well, I thought if you knew, you might run
that's
for
Shakespeare.
Senator. Mr. Kieran?
Romeo and
Romeo.
Juliet.
Yes, Romeo and Juliet. How about good name? Complete the quotation about good name, Mr. Adams.
Good name in man or woman?
Dear my lord.
Dear my lord.
Yes.
Is the immediate jewel of...
their possession.
I think that's right. And there's another quotation. He that filches from me my good name... robs me of that which not enriches him...
but makes me poor indeed.
That's the same quotation.
Yes.
Mac W. Beth.
How about grand old name? Grand old name. Mr. Adams again.
Mary Izzo.
Mary Izzo. Grand old name, yes. And who's the author of the sentiment, Mr. Adams?
George Michael Cohen.
Right. That gives us 3 out of 3 on that one. How about this one from Arthur Thompson of Orange, New Jersey? This is a question about Washington, our hosts this evening. Can you identify these famous residents of Washington? What Johnson was the pride of Washington, though he never lived at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue?
What was?
In case you don't know what 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue is, it's the place in which the...
I know where
it is. ...have a 99-year lease. Mr.
Waller Johnson, the pitcher.
Who?
Waller Johnson, the pitcher.
Yes, he was a pitcher for the Senators, quite right, the pride of Washington. How about this? What Coolidge made a lavish gift... to the Library of Congress.
Mr. Levant again.
That's Mrs. Coolidge, who has done very, very much for music. She endows chamber music and has given gifts to the congressional. She also backs quartets like the Coolidge String Quartet.
Yes, that's
right. She's a composer,
right.
Incidentally.
Yes, a distinguished music patron, Elizabeth Sprague Coolidge. And what Hoover spent 42 years in the White House? Mr. Kieran.
Ike Hoover.
Ike.
Who was Ike Hoover?
He was the general factotum down there at the...
I think he was head usher.
Yes, head usher.
Well, he did about everything.
That's right. He wrote a very good book called 42 Years in the White House about the presidents and other dignitaries that he'd associated with. How about this one from Lawrence H. Singer of New York City? This is a musical question, gentlemen. Each of the songs you're going to hear should suggest a familiar date in March. Can you identify the date from the song? Let's get 2 out of 3 and let's have the first. I had Mr. Levant's hand at once. Mr. Levant.
You should have seen me dance that in tights. That's the can-can number.
Yes, I'd just as soon not have seen you.
Well, that applies to today, March 1st, on the can rationing.
That's right. That's a perfect answer. Yeah. What's it from, Mr. Levant?
It's by Offenbach, and it caused a furore with the dandies in Paris. And it's Orpheus, I think.
Yeah. By the way, Mr. Levant, this is the first time I knew that you cared for such pleasant music as that is.
I don't, but it, you see it in Le Gaite Parisien by Offenbach every year, whether you want, like, the Rhapsody
in
Blue.
Yeah, I see. And now the second of these snippets of music, please. Now, that should give you a...
Is that St. Patrick's Day?
Go ahead.
I'm just guessing. It has an Irish lilt in its eyes. What's the name of
it's
it?
It's a great day for the Irish.
Yeah.
Is that right? Right. Now, how about the next one? Mr. Kieran.
That would be March 15th.
Why?
All of me. Why not take all of me?
And now our Heinz reporter has a few pertinent pointers about point rationing that are of interest to all of us. If you please, Ben Grauer.
Many of you folks had a brand new experience today shopping under Uncle Sam's point rationing system. And from now until victory, that's the way you'll be buying most of your favorite prepared foods. So if you'll follow a few simple rules right from the start, you'll find you can save yourself considerable time and trouble. First of all, give your grocer a break. And at the same time, make sure your family gets plenty of nourishment by planning your menus a week in advance. Then make it a habit to add up your ration points before you go to the store. Now that's a mighty easy way to speed up service and avoid the danger of running out of points. In many of today's newspapers, the makers of the 57 varieties publish the Heinz ration budget form for this very purpose of simplifying your food buying. If this handy form appeared in your paper, clip it and fill it in before you do your shopping, or else work out a simple form of your own. The important thing, whether you use the Heinz ration budget form or your own, is to figure out your ration points carefully before you leave for the store. You will be helping yourself as well as your grocer.
Thank you, Mr. Grauer. And now we'll go on with a question from Frederick Roy of Belrose, Long Island. To what persons or places were these firsts applied? And the first phrase is, first to fight. First to fight is applied, Mr. Kieran.
United States Marines.
You bet. United States Marines.
Semper Fidelis.
Right. How about this one? First to cry, hold enough. What does that recall to you, Mr. Adams?
And damned be he who first cries, hold enough.
That's quite right. And what's it from?
Macbeth.
Macbeth, yes. Whom was he challenging when he said that? You remember?
Macduff.
Macduff, yes.
Macduff.
That's the one. Now, how about this one? First in war, first in peace, and last in the American League, Mr. Kieran.
That's an old baseball thing, and it was very impolitic of you to bring it up in the city of Washington.
Yes, it is. In fact, I wonder why it's down on the card here. Yes, the Washington Senators, as Mr. Kieran has subtly suggested. Well, that gives us 3 firsts out of 3 and sends us on to a question from Lewis C. Moore of Norwood, Ohio. Can you identify these quotations from poetry or song, all of which are concerned with a voyage? The first is, For you sail at break of day. For you sail at break of day. Does that recall anything to you?
Concerned with the what?
For you sail, S-A-I-L, at break of day.
How does the question begin?
Well, identify that quotation. That's about all.
Oh.
Well, it comes from Anchors Away. Drink away, for you sail at break of day is the, are the lines that are familiar to you if you happen to know Anchors Away, Mr. Adams, which you apparently do not. Now, how about the next one? Then down from the skies came the wooden shoe, bringing the fisherman home.
Mr. Wink Cure. And... Oh, excuse me, did you call on me?
I did indeed.
Wink and blink and a nod.
Yes. Mr. Rogers, what were you going to say?
I was going to say that.
I'm awfully sorry, I should have called on you. Wink and blink and a nod from Mr. Rogers. Who wrote Wink and Blink and a Nod?
James...
Eugene Field.
Eugene Field.
Eugene Field. You were going to say James Whitcomb Riley. When everybody makes that mistake when you're at the beginning. After a while, you begin to separate them. How about this one? I've flown around the world in a plane.
I know that one.
Mr. Levant.
I've flown around, but I can't get started with you.
Don't look at me, Mr. Levant.
That's the song.
That's the song. Right. I've flown around the world in a plane. I've settled revolutions in Spain. The North Pole I've charted, but I can't get started with you. Very good. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. How about this one from Eugene Dvorovy of Blue Island, Illinois? If you were in the Army, gentlemen, and heard these bugle calls, what would you do? There are going to be 3 of them. We have to get 2 out of 3. Let's have the first. How about it, Mr.? Yes, Mr. Rogers?
You'd stand at attention.
You do what?
Retreat.
Well, which? How about it? No, I think that's wrong. Mr. Kieran?
Well, you could get ready to go to bed if you wanted, but you wouldn't necessarily have to hurry.
Yes.
That's
what?
A tattoo.
Tattoo, yes. A tattoo is right. You extinguish all lights in your living quarters. It sounded at what time, Mr. Kieran?
Well, in our army, which was a very old-fashioned army, it was sounded at 9 o'clock.
I think the same is still true. It still sounded at 9 p.m. Have to call that wrong. Now, how about the next one? Yes, Mr. Rogers.
Well, there... There you would stand at attention.
What does that mean?
That is, I don't know what you call it. It's when they lower the flag.
Yes, that's quite right, Mr. Rogers. It's retreat. You stand at attention. It's the call for the official lowering of the flag. That's absolutely right. And now the third and last.
I don't know the answer, but he plays those bugle calls very well.
He plays them very well. Mr.
Well,
Kieran?
I'll take a chance. I don't remember that, and I think it's a call that is infrequently played, so it might be pay call.
No.
Rogers,
I know that.
Got another idea?
Oh, you would know pay call. You must have been in a good army.
That isn't a news weekly, is it?
No, it's fatigue. It means it's a call to ordinary post work, shoveling snow, or some similar task. Well, I guess we lose $57 in war bonds and stamps, Mr. Dvorovy, and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Ladies and gentlemen, the H.J. Hines Company is surrendering its commercial time tonight so that we may listen to a few words from Private Carl Drake of the Army Air Forces.
Well, Mr. Fetterman, there isn't much of a story. I'm Private Drake of Oklahoma. I served 8 months in the British Isles, and now I'm back here for hospitalization. When we got to Britain, the first people to help us were Red Cross workers. When we got to London on leave and felt strange or lonesome, we went to Red Cross clubs and got bed and breakfast for 4 vets and free tickets to the theaters, sightseeing tours, and everything to keep a fellow from getting homesick. Well, I was wounded. I can't tell you how or when, and I wouldn't be here tonight if it wasn't for Red Cross blood plasma. When I came out of the ether, the first thing I saw was an American Red Cross nurse smiling at me, an American smile. Folks, the Red Cross is our lifeline to home, Don't cut it. Don't weaken it. Make it stronger. We need it, and we can't do without it.
Well, I don't know how much... I was going to say that I don't know how much that American smile was worth to Private Drake. Suppose we figure it at $125 million. Ladies and gentlemen, the rest is up to you. And now we'll go on with a question from Helen Gray Solomon of Nashville, Tennessee. We have to get 2 out of 3 on this one, gentlemen. Identify the soldier of fiction who joined an army after rescuing the woman he loved from a burning city. Mr. Levant.
Gone with the Wind.
Yes.
Rhett Butler.
Rhett Butler is right. Perfect response. How about a soldier who joined an army while on a year's leave from the university where he was an instructor?
Oh.
Mr. Levant again.
Is that Mrs. Garson again?
Who?
Mrs. Minerva. What's her name? Greer Garson.
No.
She was in that.
No. It's understandable that you have her on your mind, but it wasn't Greer Garson. No, it was the hero of Hemingway's For Whom the Bell Tolls. The hero's name was what?
Jordan, Robert
yes,
Jordan.
Very good, Mr. Levant. Robert Jordan. And what side was he on?
He was on the Loyalist side.
Yes, otherwise known as the Spanish side, Mr. Levant. Now, which soldier of fiction joined an army because all his classmates did at the urging of his teacher? Well, this goes
oh, that's
back
Leslie
quite a
way. Howard. Remember that?
No, I don't remember it.
You can't afford pictures, incidentally.
No.
That
you
was the invasion. No, not the invasion.
You can't afford books.
Now, Mr. Levant, how about straightening us out?
Well, that was the story with Leslie Howard, whether you could afford it or not.
But what picture was it?
He was a professor, and they took a tour through Germany around 1939, in the summer of 39.
Well, I don't think that is the answer, though it sounds kind of convincing to me. It's All Quiet on the Western Front. And it's the hero of that book, Paul Baumer. That goes back a couple of years,
well,
even in pictures. And I guess, let's see, that sends $57 to Miss Solomon and War Bonds and Stamps and a set of the Britannica. How about this one from S.J. Schwartz, Jr., of New Orleans, Louisiana. Oh, this is all about ex-congressman, Mr. Rogers. Who was an ex-congressman who was elected president twice? Now, there's a cheerful idea, Mr. Rogers. Mr. Levant, as a matter of fact, there were several. Mr. Adams.
Abraham Lincoln
yes.
was one.
That's quite right, Mr. Adams. Abraham Lincoln, the most famous. And there were two others of lesser fame. Congressman who were later elected president two times, Mr. Adams?
Andrew Jackson.
I think not.
Theodore Roosevelt?
No, I think not.
McKinley?
Yes, Mr.
McKinley.
Kieran has it right. William McKinley and the other one is James Madison. Now, how about an ex-congressman who conducted the Philharmonic?
Oh.
Mr. Levant?
That's tricky, huh?
I don't know.
That's LaGuardia.
Yes, he did conduct the Philharmonic.
He does it every week with those air raids.
Was it the Firebird music that he conducted, Mr. Levant?
He likes noise, I'll tell you that.
And an ex-congressman, gentleman, who is now a cabinet member. That should be an easy one. A very distinguished public servant. An ex-congressman who is now a cabinet member. Oh, come, come. Mr. Rogers?
Was Secretary of War Stimson?
I think not. No, I think not. Hull is the right answer.
That's right.
Cordell Hull, our Secretary of State. Well, I guess we did get 2 out of 3 right on that one. How about this one from Mrs. E.C. Turner of New York? Identify the literary or fictitious characters who traveled in the following way. I'll give you the route. The first traveled from Grand Pre to Louisiana to the Ozarks to Michigan to Philadelphia. Mr. Kieran?
Evangeline.
Yes. Whom was Evangeline seeking?
She was seeking Gabriel.
That's right. In
Longfellow's Evangeline.
Yes, 100%. How about this one? Who traveled from Memphis to St. Joe?
Mr. Levant?
My mama done told me.
That's the one. It was really the mama who did the traveling then.
The lyric writer wrote it. Johnny Mercer, he can tell you about it.
He can tell us. How about this one? Who traveled from Paris to Pamplona to Bayonne to San Sebastian to Madrid? Paris to Pamplona to Bayonne to San Sebastian to Madrid.
Where's Bayonne?
Not in New Jersey.
Is that...
Mr. Adams?
Anthony Edwards.
That's just a wild guess, isn't it?
That's just a wild guess.
Is that Archbishop Spellman?
No. No, it's a fictitious character.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Fictitious character, and the answer is Jake, a character in what book?
Jake.
The Sun Also Rises by Hemingway. Mr. Rogers, you had that on the tip of your tongue.
No.
Yes, you did. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. How about this one from A.M. Rosen of Houston, Texas? In which 2 services do you find these equivalent ranks? Lieutenant and captain. They're equivalent in what 2 services? Mr. Kieran?
Well, a lieutenant in the Navy is equivalent to a captain in the Army.
That's exactly right, Mr. Kieran. Now, here are 2 more equivalent ranks. These get harder. Sergeant Major and Master Sergeant. Sergeant Major and Master Sergeant. Mr. Rogers?
The Marines.
Right.
And the Army.
That's exactly right, Mr. Rogers. Good going. Now, how about this? Third Officer and Ensign. This is a tough one. You sure about it, Oscar?
I never was sure of anything in my life. One is the Navy. Let John take the hard part.
Mr.
Third officer and what?
Third officer and ensign.
Well, they're both...
Both in the Navy.
No, not both in the United States Navy.
No.
One would be British Navy and the United States Navy.
Let's stick to our own service, Mr. Adams. Let's stick to our own...
I think the other would be in the Merchant Marine.
Don't think so.
Well, then it might be in the British Navy.
Maybe it's a ball player.
It is the Merchant Marine.
You've got me thoroughly confounded.
Well, what is it?
No, the answer is this. The third officer is an officer in the wax, and that's the same as an ensign in the waves. Get it? Well, I don't see why you 2 people shouldn't know that.
I'm not allowed to see women after dark.
Mr. Rogers, I bet if we had Congressman Luce down here, she would have known it. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. How about this one from Miss May Farley of Campbell, California? Who is the it referred to in these lines? It flooded the crimson twilight like the close of an angel's psalm. Mr. Adams?
The Lost Chord.
Yes, Lost Chord. It's a very famous poem, and I suppose very few people know who wrote it. Do you, Mr. Adams?
Who wrote the poem?
Yeah.
S. Baring Gould.
I think you're thinking of Onward Christian Soldiers.
I am. Who wrote the poem? Elizabeth Akers Allen or somebody like that.
No, A. Adelaide A. Proctor.
Adelaide Ann Proctor, yes. And Sullivan wrote the music.
A more useless bit of information has never been vouchsafed on this program, Mr. Adams. Even lazy jellyfish can do it.
What?
Even lazy jellyfish can do it. Mr. Levant?
My mama done told me.
Well, you got the general idea. The it refers to what?
Dancing.
No. Falling in love. Oh. Falling in love.
Oh, is that Cole Porter?
That's Cole Porter, yes. Mm-hmm. How about this one? It will never pass into nothingness. Mr. Kieran?
That is from the Ode on a Grecian Urn by John Keats. It's Endymion. And opening of Endymion.
Yes, how does it go?
Thing of beauty is a joy forever.
Yes, can you give us a line or 2 more?
No, I can't.
It's not so very easy.
It will never pass...
Its loveliness increases. It will never pass into nothingness.
Nothingness, but will ever keep a bower and something where
there
we can...
There you are. Play. I knew you knew it. That's right. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. Now, the H.J. Hines Company tonight has paid out $228 in war bonds and stamps and 4 sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Mr. Rogers, our best thanks. Next week, the Adams-Levant-Kieran combination will bat out the answers from our New York studios, while our guest, the cinema maestro Gregory Ratoff, answers them from Hollywood through a special hookup which I couldn't explain even if I understood it. Remember, send your questions and the correct answers to Information Please at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now our Heinz reporter, Ben Grauer, has a word for the Grocers of America.
Yes, Mr. Fadiman, I want to invite every grocer to ask his Heinz man for a supply of ration budget forms for his customers. They help you give Mrs. America better, quicker service. And next Monday night, we'll be back again at the very same spot on your dial with another session of Information Please. Until then, the H.J. Heinz Company, makers of the 57 varieties, bids you good night.
Now to get us ready for the next show, let's listen to Donald O'Connor in The Naked City.
Now, let's get on with our drama. Mr. Miller, will you please set the scene for Naked City?
Right.
Thank you.
Here we go to New York. Approaching the magic skyline of the city, peering down into the lives of 8 million people, each person with a story all his own.
Sorry, dear, I was detained at the office.
There's a guy with a different story every night. Now the sun is rising, setting the sky aflame. Somehow the spirit of love pervades this warm spring morning. Romance is everywhere. Look on that bush in Central Park. A little boy bird is telling a little girl bird how he loves her.
I love you! I love you lots and
he's acting. Yes, love has come to our city. For instance, let us go to a building just off the East River and look in on a honeymoon apartment.
Fresh.
Oops, wrong apartment. Let's try this one. It's the home of two lovebirds. Young Detective O'Connor and his charming wife, Gwendolyn, who says...
Oh, Donald, you're a wonderful detective.
That's true. You know, I'm the man who sent Lucky Myers to the hot seat. And I sent Lucky Finnegan to the hot seat. And Lucky Luigi and Lucky Smith.
You mean...
Yes. I've been burning Lucky's now for 25 years.
There's just one thing...
I've been burning Lucky's for now for 25 years.
There's just one thing, Donald. In all the time we've been married, you've never even kissed me. Every time you take me in your arms, the telephone rings and you're called off on another case.
I'll fix that right now. I'll rip out the phone by the roots. By the roots. There. Now, Gwendolyn, come into my eager arms. Noisy roots. Hello? This is Sam Spade, the detective. No, wrong. Hello, Detective O'Connor speaking.
And this is Chief Gilhooly. Hurry over to Gloria DePeister's apartment. I just found a beautiful, seductive blonde floating in the bathtub.
Well, what do you want from me?
A towel. She's soaking wet.
So long, Gwendolyn. I'm off on a case. Oops. Hiya, Chief. Where's the body?
In the next room.
She's a blonde. 5'2". Eyes are blue. 36 hips, 36 chest, 36 teeth. And she used to be a model.
How do you know all that?
I peeked on the next page. Okay, Chief Gilhooly, wash the blood off that knife. Wipe those fingerprints off the wall and empty that bottle of poison down the sink. And then we'll get to work.
What do we do?
What do we do? We'll hunt for clues.
Hello, you great, big, manly detectives. Anything I can do for you?
Sudan?
So this is the body. I better inspect it carefully.
O'Connor, that's not the body.
Chief, you inspect your evidence and I'll stick to mine. Now let's look for fingerprints.
Okay. Fingerprints here.
Fingerprints here.
Fingerprints here.
Fingerprints here.
That's funny. No fingerprints here.
Wonder why.
No wonder, boys. You're looking down my mouth.
Gloria, you shut up and get back in that bathtub. You're dead.
No, I'm not.
I'm glad you said that. We would have left right out in the middle with the... Come in again. Quick, come in again.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
I wouldn't be...
Oh.
No, I'm not. I wouldn't be found dead in a bathtub.
Oh, no? Then what were you doing in the bathtub?
Well, to tell the truth, I was mowing the lawn.
What, in the bathtub?
Sure, that way you don't get grass all over the yard.
Glad you've got a logical explanation.
Well, O'Connor, you haven't got a joke either.
You're ad-libbing.
I'm sorry.
You're
the comic.
There's only one comic from this show.
Well, O'Connor, I guess this was just
Wait a minute. Don't say a word. Don't say a word. Don't speak. Don't say a word. Don't. Wait. Go ahead. I found my place.
Connor, guess this was just a false alarm.
Yeah, I'm going to go home and make love to my wife.
Donald, at last you're home.
Yes, and I'm going to make love to you till the cows come home. Till the cows come home. Come here, Gwen.
Moo. O'Connor, rush out to Gloria DePeister's country estate. This time she's been beaten, shot, and strangled. There's a bottle of poison in her mouth and a rope tied around her neck.
What do you think?
I suspect foul play.
I'll be right out. Gwendolyn, I gotta go.
Oh, Don. Look at the stars, but I'll see your eyes. I'll look at the harbor lights, but I'll see your eyes. I'll see your eyes. Why, you dirty dog.
You slapped me. What was that for?
For spying on me all the time.
Well, I'm off to the scene of the murder. Oops.
O'Connor, I found a suspect. Gloria's boyfriend, Killer Miller.
Uh-huh, Miller. Where were you at the time Gloria was shot?
In the steam room of the YWCA.
Oh, yeah?
Well, how could you get into the steam room of the YWCA?
Errol Flynn lent me his pass.
You're in the clear. Now we'll, Will you take your smoking gun and get out of here? We're trying to solve a murder.
Well, if you wait till I wash the blood off my hands, maybe I can help you solve this murder.
Oh, get out of here. Every Tom and Harry wants to be a dick.
Well, O'Connor, you leave this mug to me. I'll get the truth out of him.
Okay, Gilhooly. I'll run home and make love to my wife. Guy Lumbago.
You're home, Donald. Darling, hold me close.
Sweetheart.
Precious, hold me close. Oh, this case has been running you ragged, Donald. You haven't changed your clothes for 3 days.
The lights are out.
How can you tell? I haven't had my clothes off for 3 days.
Never mind, but don't hold me so close.
Gwendolyn, I shall hold you close. And for the first time in our married life, I shall now make love to you. Well, my name isn't Donald O'Connor. Ralph Smithers speaking. Okay, Chief, I'll be right over. Well, I couldn't miss it every time. Chief Gilhoy, what's new?
O'Connor, I have deduced that the fatal shot was fired from 45 feet away.
Uh-huh. Killer Joe Miller, where were you when the shot was fired?
In the bathroom.
Mm-hmm. How far is that from here?
45 feet.
This case gets more baffling every minute. Miller, I can't spend the rest of my life on this case. I should be home making love to my wife.
Me too. Look, couldn't you confess to something? Couldn't...
You know, I didn't understand that joke.
Look, couldn't you confess to something simple, Miller, like stealing the city's flowers so we could at least give you 90 days?
Well, okay. I admit I pick city gardenias. So
not so fast. I gotta write this down.
Okay, okay. I admit...
Is that spelled A-D-M-E-T?
M-I-T.
Oh.
Did I pick...
P-I-C-C?
No, with a K as in kill.
Oh.
City gardenias.
Gardenias, C-A-R-D.
No, with G as in Gloria.
Oh.
Pick them to sell.
C-E-L-L.
No, S as in sign.
Oh.
And I collected money.
K-O-L.
No, C as in chief.
Oh.
I also stole flower pots.
B-O-T-S. B-O-T-S.
No. With a P as in police.
Oh, yes,
you
yes.
You got that?
Oh, yes, I've got it. And how I've got it. Gilhoy, you dirty rat, take that.
Oh, Connor, you shot me. Didn't you just get a written confession?
Yeah, I sure did, and it says, I admit I killed Gloria. Signed the chief of police. At last, I can go home and make love to my wife.
And that's the story of one life in our naked city. Now dusk is falling. Bright lights go on along Broadway. Many colored lights twinkle in the harbor. A fog is rolling in. Colored lights and fog are beautiful. Yet there's heartbreak in this scene. For down in his waterfront apartment, a lonely young man cries bitterly.
Gwendolyn! Gwendolyn, you're gone. I finally got a chance to hold you close and you left. Why? Why, Gwendolyn? Why? Why? Why?
And out of the night, the answer returns.
We'll have more game shows soon, but now it's time to start thinking like detectives. Two detectives, to be exact. It's Mr. and Mrs. North. This one is called Wheel of Chance. From 1953.
Why, Mr. Connors, what are you...
Okay, back up inside fast.
What are you...
Inside, Mrs. North. Hurry up and you won't get hurt. But if you stall around, you're in trouble.
Mr. and Mrs. North, starring Alice Frost and Joseph Curtin. Listen as Pam and Jerry solve the mystery, Wheel of Chance. Mr. and Mrs. North, transcribed, is brought to you by the Colgate-Palmolive Pete Company, makers of Halo Shampoo to glorify your hair, Colgate Brushless Shaving Cream for tough beards and tender skins, and Colgate Chlorophyll Toothpaste to help destroy unpleasing breath originating in the mouth. Take any brownstone building on any New York side street, walk in, look into any room, and the odds are 4-1 you'll find someone waiting for a phone call. In this case, his name is Harry Connors, occupation dubious, past shady, state of mind, tense, distraught, nerves jangling like...
Yeah, about time. Hello?
Connors?
Yeah, where you been, Lorenz? I've been
You're
waiting...
You're nervous, Connors. Irritable.
Now, look...
Sign of insecurity. Lack of confidence.
Yeah, your telegram said you'd call...
I'm calling long distance, my friend. Words are expensive.
Okay, Lorenz.
Pencil handy?
Yeah.
Take this down. It's a gray convertible, 1953 model.
Okay. New York license plate?
Yes, license number 24S373.
24S373.
You can learn the name of the owner from the Motor Vehicle Bureau or whatever it's called in New York City.
Now, that'll be easy.
You'll find our prize in the left front wheel. Understand? The left front wheel.
Okay.
The car should be in New York within the next 48 hours. A young couple driving. They went through customs here at the border 2 days ago.
No trouble.
Why should there be trouble? They seemed like such respectable people.
Pam. Pam.
Oh, I must have dozed off. Where are we?
Home. Vacation's over.
Home?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Jerry, I couldn't have slept that long.
You slept through half of New Jersey and most of the Bronx.
Oh, impossible. I wasn't sleepy. You must have been driving too fast again.
Only as fast as the law allows. Grab the little suitcase, dear. I'll get the others.
3 glorious weeks across the border and now this.
I'll help you upstairs with the luggage and then run the car down to the garage.
What for?
Needs a tune-up. I'd like to have it sometime tomorrow.
Excuse me, folks.
Yes?
You're tenants in this building, aren't you?
Yes, we are.
Well, me too. I just signed a lease this morning.
Well, that's very nice.
I'm kind of getting acquainted with the neighborhood. From out of town, you know, and I can't get used to this New York parking situation.
Well, just between us, you never will.
Any place around here a guy can keep his car without getting a ticket or a dented fender?
Well, Jerry usually keeps ours on that street behind the building, don't you, dear?
There's usually a space or two there.
Oh, well, thanks. That's good to know. Oh, here, let me hold that door for you.
Oh, thank you, Mr.
Connors.
Well, good luck in your new apartment, Mr. Connors.
Well, thank you, Mr. North. I'll be seeing you around.
Right. Come on, Pam. I want to get to the garage. Pam.
Jerry.
Darling, the garage closes.
Jerry, do we know that man?
Connors? No.
Well, then how in the world did he know our name?
Yes, ma'am. What can we do for... Oh, you.
Oh, that's a fine way to greet a customer, Toby. Smile, baby.
I'm busy, Anita. What do you want?
That's funny. Your greetings used to be so much cozier.
Anita, I can't talk here.
Where will we talk, baby? Your place? Get your wife to invite me over. She'd love to hear us talk.
There's a car on the ramp. You'd better move.
I need more dough, Toby.
I haven't got it. You know, doggone well, I haven't got a dime left.
Oh, but you can get it, can't you?
Anita, for Pete's sake, this is a garage, not a gold mine. Do your prospecting someplace else.
You can get it. For me?
I've got a little blood left. Do you want that, too? When are you going to let me alone, Anita? When do you pull out the needle?
Oh, smile, baby.
It took me years to save up that last bankroll. And I had to get mixed up with you.
I'd hate to have to upset your wife, Toby boy. She seems to love you so much.
Move your car, will you?
If she knew about us, she'd be miserable, wouldn't she?
Hi, Toby. Yes, sir. Be right with you. Anita, please, beat it.
Call me tonight?
Yeah, I'll call you.
All right, if I leave my car back there, Toby.
Hi, Mr. North. I'll take care of it.
Oh, sure. Toby takes care of everything.
Who's that?
Just a customer.
Pretty.
Yeah.
I think you can get my car tuned up by tomorrow, Toby. I think the spark plugs need cleaning and... Hey, Toby.
I'm sorry, Mr. North.
Do all pretty girls affect you like this?
No, sir. Just that one.
Pam. Pam, wake up.
Oh. What time is it?
Late. Time to go to bed.
Oh, isn't this awful? 3 weeks vacation, and then I do nothing but sleep for 3 days after it. Oh, scratch my back, will you, dear?
Okay.
Good. Now, a little higher.
Yeah, how's this?
Oh, wonderful. We ought to take vacations more often, Jerry.
You've only been home 3 days, Mrs. North.
A little to the left.
Oh.
That's it. 2 vacations a year. We'd be healthy.
And dead broke. Now, who the devil can that be?
Oh, I'll get it. All right. Just a minute. Why, Mr. Cobb?
Okay, back up inside fast. Inside, I said. Now, hurry up and you won't get hurt. This gun isn't made of chocolate.
Well, isn't it rather late to be visiting Mr. Connors?
Who is it, dear?
Don't answer. Let him come in.
Hey, Pam. Who's at the door? What?
Come on in, North. Sit down.
Hey, what is this?
Sit down. You too, beautiful.
Yes, sir.
What do you want, Connors? Why the gun?
It's not chocolate, Jerry.
Now, where is it?
Where's what?
Don't get cute. It's gone. What'd you do with it?
I'm afraid I don't know what you're talking about,
Connors.
Now,
look, you two. It was under your hubcap when you crossed the border. It's not there now. I'm warning you, it's important enough to kill for. So let's have it, now.
We haven't got it.
Then get it.
But...
Now.
Mr. Connors, we wouldn't keep a thing like that around the house. It
Pam,
might go...
what are you...
Okay, so you got it stashed away. I'll give you 1 hour to unstash it.
At this time of night? Well, everything is closed, Mr. Connors. We
All right, I'll give you till noon tomorrow.
Oh, we'll need more time
noon
than that.
Noon tomorrow. And I warn you, no funny stuff. You'll be watched, you'll be tailed, you'll...
Really, Mr. Connors?
Noon tomorrow. And like I said, it's important enough to kill for.
Well, Pam and Jerry may be in the dark, but they can still see they're in trouble. Men, want real shaving satisfaction at a big bargain? Then take advantage of Colgate Shaving Cream's special offer at your dealers now. Here's what you get. A large-sized tube of Colgate lather or Colgate brushless shaving cream free of extra cost when you buy the giant-sized tube of lather or brushless at regular price. That's right. Your choice of a large-sized tube of Colgate lather or brushless shaving cream free of extra cost. For you lather shave cream fans, you'll find nothing beats those clean, close, million-bubble shaves you get with Colgate lather shaving cream. And you men who prefer a brushless cream, light and fluffy Colgate brushless is the easy way, not the greasy way, for shaving tough beards and tender skin. Whatever your choice, lather or brushless, take advantage of Colgate shaving cream's special offer now. A large-sized tube of Colgate lather or brushless, free of extra cost, when you buy the giant size at regular price. Do it now, while dealer supplies of the special pack last. Now, back to Mr. and Mrs. North.
Okay, now, what did this guy look like?
Well, Bill, he was rather nondescript.
He was a little shorter than Jerry, but heavier.
Medium brown hair, was wearing a gray fedora and a light tan suit.
And a gun.
Mm. But, Bill, what in the world could possibly be hidden in the hubcap of our car?
Oh, anything, Pam. At least anything flat and thin.
But how could it have got there?
Well, anybody could have pried the cap off while the car was parked.
But why, dear? And who?
Hey, Bill.
What?
Wait a minute. Wait just 1 minute. The garage.
The garage?
Where I took the car for a tune-up.
We didn't have a flat.
No, but at a lot of garages, it's routine to check the brake lining.
Oh.
You'd have to pull a wheel to... Toby may have found something.
Who's Toby?
The mechanic.
Darling, you may be right. Come on.
Hey, hold it, Pam. It wouldn't do any good to go to the garage this time of night. It's closed.
Do you know where this Toby lives?
No.
Do you know his last name?
Mm-mm.
Well, in that case, there's nothing to do but wait until morning. You say this Connors guy said you'd be watched and followed?
Yeah, but he may have been bluffing.
Maybe he was and maybe he wasn't. Anyway, I want you two to go to the garage alone in the morning.
But Bill...
Now, wait a minute. I'll have a man tailing you to see if you're followed. And if you are, he might be able to grab the guy and we can get to the bottom of this.
Okay.
But Bill, what about tomorrow at noon?
If Connors shows, my man will be outside ready to take him. Now, there's nothing to worry about, Pam.
Golly, Bill. I hope so.
sure sorry, Mr. North. You said you just wanted a tune-up. You didn't tell me to check the brakes.
Well, I thought you'd check them anyway, Toby.
Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. It depends on how busy we are. I'll be glad to look them over for you if you want.
Toby, didn't you even look under the hubcaps?
Oh, no, ma'am. Hubcaps?
You know, on the wheels.
Oh, hubcaps.
Were you the only one to work on the car, Toby?
Yes, sir. We've been kind of shorthanded here lately.
And you didn't find anything? Nothing at all?
A couple of bum spark plugs.
Are they thin and flat?
Pam.
Well,
it's okay, Toby. We just thought maybe...
Mr. North, if those brakes are bad or if you're not satisfied, I'll be glad
No, nothing like that. We just lost something and, well, you know...
Oh. Anything important?
Yes, but don't worry about it.
Well, what was it?
Oh, nothing important.
What?
If you find anything that looks like it came out from under a hubcap, let us know right away, will you, Toby? It's important.
Well, Toby boy.
Hello, Anita.
Just like old times, Come on in. Aren't you AWOL from that grease pit you work in?
Yeah.
Sit down.
Thanks, I'll stand.
Oh, come on. Sit here.
I'll stand.
Okay, what do you want?
I want you to get out of town, out of my life.
Smile, baby.
I mean it. I made a big mistake getting mixed up with you. I paid plenty for it. Now I'm telling you, get out of my life.
I can.
Yes, you can.
Uh-uh. I need expense money.
You'll get it.
From you?
Yeah. My last installment. Final payment.
You said you were broke.
I am. But I struck gold.
In that garage?
In that garage, under the hubcap of a car.
Don't make jokes, Toby boy. I'm getting tired of
Look.
You. What is it?
Microfilm. The Norths went on a vacation, they said, across the border. They slipped this under a hubcap so the customs inspectors wouldn't find it, but they slipped up. I got to it before they could use it.
Let's see. Let me see.
A whole spool of film. Full of spy stuff. Names, addresses, even pictures of enemy agents working in this area. And their contacts across the border.
You sure it belongs to them?
Well, they came in looking for it just an hour ago. It's dynamite. It's worth a fortune. It'll even pay your fare right out of my life.
Yeah. Yeah, it sure will. What are you going to do with it, baby?
Uncle Sam writes big checks for things like this. The FBI gets the microfilm. I get the reward, and you get...
The FBI?
Who else? With this film, they
And
could...
the Norths? What about the Norths?
The FBI will take care of them. Too bad, too. The nicest people are turning out to be spies these days.
Toby boy, if you ever opened up that pointed head of yours, a moth would fly out.
Was that so? Well, here, look at this film. Go on, hold it up to the light.
Listen, you stupid little grease monkey. The FBI may give you a reward for that, sure. A box lunch and a bottle of milk. But what about the Norths? What'll they pay for it?
Well, that's not the point.
I'll tell you what they'll pay for it. They'll dig up Fort Knox. They'll steal piggy banks from every kid this side of the Kremlin. They'll hock their souls and auction off half of Europe to get that microfilm. That's what they'll pay for it.
But they're spies.
Sure, they're spies. You have enough on them to hang them. You can make them pay and pay and pay.
No.
And pay.
No, Anita, I can't do that.
What do you mean you can't do it? All you have to do is pick up the phone and call them up.
No. I'll settle for half the dough and all of my conscience.
Yeah? Well, I won't.
Put the phone down.
Get away.
Put it down, I said. Put it down.
Let go.
That's better.
A real patriot, aren't you, Toby? What do I have to do to convince you, Mr. Patriot? You got a chance to rub money in your hair and you're worried about dandruff. Oh, what do I have to do, Toby?
Nothing. Let me handle it my way.
What must I do, baby? Tell your wife about us.
This is a lot bigger than that. This is...
Oh, a real patriot. All right, come here. Come here, Mr. Patriot.
Forget that stuff, Anita.
Come here.
Forget it, will you?
Just like old times, Toby boy. Can't forget old times, baby.
Cut it out, Anita.
Love these old times. Here. Call the Norths, baby. Call them now.
Thank you.
But you were completely in the clear, Jerry. My man didn't spot anyone tailing you.
Are you sure?
Oh, not a chance. Now, what about the mechanic? You think he was telling the truth about not finding anything?
That was hard to tell, Bill. He seemed a little flustered.
Well, that might not mean anything. Now, you just sit tight until noon.
Right, but you're sure your man won't take off for lunch?
Well, now, stop worrying.
Okay.
So no one followed us?
No. Bill says that... Oh, I'll get it here. Hello.
Mr. North?
Speaking.
This is Toby, Mr. North.
Oh, hi, Toby. What's on your mind?
Toby, what does he want?
I think I have the item you're looking for.
What? I can't hear you, Toby.
I said I think I have the item you're looking for.
Did he find it? What is it, Jerry?
Shh. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you. Where are you?
Well, I have to be back at the garage in a little while.
Okay, I'll meet you there.
Oh, no, no. No, that's no good.
Well, you want to come up here, or we can go to your house?
No, I'll be back here at my friend's place about 2 o'clock.
2 o'clock?
Mr. Connors said noon, Jerry.
It has to be sooner than that, Toby.
I can't make it any sooner. I have to go back to work. Meet me here at my friend's place. I'll give you the address.
Take this down, then.
All right.
Okay, let's have it.
67 Bryce Street, apartment 1D.
67 Bryce Street, apartment 1D.
I've got it.
Toby, can't you possibly make it before 2?
No, that's as good a time to talk business as any.
I can't hear you.
I said it's a good time to talk business.
Business? What kind of business?
Big business, Mr. North. Be sure to bring your checkbook.
Jerry.
Hmm?
Look at the time.
Yeah.
10 minutes before noon. Where's Bill's man?
At the back door.
How's he going to know when Mr. Connors comes in?
He can hear the buzzer.
Is the back door unlocked?
Mm-hmm.
Are you sure?
Positive.
Shouldn't we check it again?
Relax, Pam. It'll all be over in 10 minutes.
Bill's man can't get in that back door. It certainly will. Jerry, look. Noon, straight up. Oh, why does he have to be so prompt?
Well, here goes. You wait here, dear.
Oh, no.
Wait there.
I wish you'd have checked the back door. Jerry? Jerry? Jerry, why won't you answer me? Oh, who is this man?
It's all right, dear. He's just a salesman.
A salesman?
Yes, darling. A life insurance salesman. Oh, here, 67. Here's the house. Apparently Bill isn't here yet. I don't see his car. What time is it?
2 o'clock exactly. Oh, we better get up and see Toby.
On the contrary, we'd better wait for Bill.
Well, he knows the address and the apartment number, doesn't he?
I gave them to him when I telephoned after Connors didn't show up.
Well, then, let's go up and talk to Toby. Bill will be along.
All right, dear. I'm too tired to argue.
Why do you suppose that man Connors didn't show up at noon?
Only two reasons I can think of. Either he got what he wanted or he knows we don't have it.
Toby says he has it. Anyway, I'd feel better if I knew where Mr. Connors was.
Yeah, so would I.
Jerry, wait. Before you close the door.
What?
That taxi across the street.
Hmm?
I could swear it's been following us. At least it looks just like the one I kept seeing in the rearview mirror.
Darling, there are probably a couple of thousand taxi cabs like that, all the same color, yellow.
Well,
besides, if it's been following us, it's probably Sergeant What's-His-Name, Bill's man. Come on. Toby's friend lives on the first floor. Must be down this way.
1B, 1C. Here it is. Look. It was unlocked. Now, why in the world should they leave their door?
What's the matter, Pam?
Oh.
Good Lord.
Jerry, she's dead.
Very dead.
Who do you suppose she is?
Toby's friend, probably.
She's so pretty.
Sure. Sure, she's the one.
One what?
In the garage. She was talking to Toby in the garage the day I brought the car in.
Jerry, let's get out of here.
Yeah, let's get out of here. Let's all get out of here.
Connors, what the...
Come on, now, both of you, move.
Oh, what for?
Because I like your company.
And that's still not made of chocolate, is it?
Nope.
Same guy, same gun. Now, let's go.
Where to?
Well, you two have a nasty habit. You keep getting in the way all the time.
So?
So, I'm going to see that you're put out of the way for keeps. Now, move.
Now, look here, Connors.
You heard me. Move. And since you're expecting your cop friend Wagon, we'll go out the back way.
Harry Connors seems to have a talent for appearing in the wrong place, as well as at the wrong time. Remember, soaping dulls hair. Halo glorifies it, so...
Halo, everybody, halo. Halo is the shampoo that glorifies your hair, so halo, everybody, halo.
Yes, there's your cue to lovely, naturally lustrous hair. Soaping your hair with even finest liquid or cream shampoos hides its natural luster with dulling soap film. But Halo Shampoo is not a soap or cream. Made with a special ingredient, Halo glorifies your hair with your very first shampoo. Even in hardest water, Halo gives oceans of rich, soft water lather. Needs no special rinse. Halo removes embarrassing dandruff from both hair and scalp. Leaves hair soft, shining, easy to manage. Ideal for children's hair, too. Next time, be sure to buy Halo, America's favorite shampoo.
So Halo, everybody, Halo. Halo Shampoo, Halo.
Now, back to Mr. and Mrs. North.
Why have you brought us to this warehouse?
You'll find out, Mrs. North. All right, hold it.
Who is that?
Connors. Well, Connors, what are these people doing here?
I had to bring them, Lorenz.
We'll decide that later. Inside.
You found the film? Right here.
Good. Film, microfilm. So that...
Thin, flat spool.
You used our car to smuggle it across the border.
It was nothing personal, my friends. Your car or another. It just happened to be yours we picked. Of course, as it turned out, we made an unfortunate choice. But we had no way of knowing you would take your car to a garage or that you had a friend in the police department.
And we had never known, Lorenz, if I hadn't put that bug on their phone line.
Bug on our telephone line? What do you mean by that?
He means he tapped our phone.
So that's how you knew that we'd contacted the police and that
Connors is a man of varied and useful talents, aren't you, Harry?
Well, I got the film for you, didn't I?
Okay, you've got your film. Now what?
You brought them, Connors. What do you suggest?
Well, I don't know.
You must have had something in mind.
No, look, Lorenz, I told you I had to bring him. I didn't have time to think. I just had to get out of there.
Out of where?
Lorenz, will you stop talking?
Connors. I have the feeling something has happened that I should be told about.
No, Lorenz.
Not unless you already know about the killing.
Killing?
Shut up, will you?
What killing?
Don't listen to her, Lorenz.
What killing, Connors? What killing?
The killing at 67 Bryce Street, apartment 1D, Lorenz.
67 Bryce? Connors, what's this all about?
Oh, well, I had to do it, Lorenz. I had to. A dame got hold of the film. She wouldn't
you
give it up.
Fool.
Well, you wanted the film, didn't you?
You stupid.
Before I could get out, these two walked in.
I told you I wouldn't tolerate bad judgment, Connors. A murder at this stage of our work can only attract attention. I told you we had to work quietly, unnoticed, unseen.
I know.
You knew, yes, you knew, but that isn't what you did. You've killed one person and you've brought two more here to be silenced somehow. It's a shame, Connors. A shame you tried so hard and failed so miserably.
Now stay away,
Lorenz. A little man in a big job. Connors!
Stay away, I
Get
said.
Get his gun. Get his gun.
I'm warning you, Lorenz.
Watch it, you fool.
Get it, Pam. Get the gun.
I've got it, Jerry.
Lorenz, let go.
Connors, okay. You bungling, brainless.
Shut up, will you shut up?
Here. Take the gun, Jerry.
Okay, Pam, and stay right where you are, Lorenz. This gun isn't made of chocolate. You can take Connor's word for it.
And that was Toby in the taxi that followed us to Anita's apartment.
Mm-hmm. He was just stringing Anita along, making her think he was going to blackmail us.
Oh.
That's why he insisted meeting us at 2 o'clock. He wanted to give himself time to warn us, but he missed us at our apartment, and by the time we got to... Oh, you tired, darling?
Dead.
You want me to drive?
No, dear, we're almost home. Oh, gollies, I didn't sleep a wink last night. I laid awake trying to figure out what could have been under our hubcap.
Yeah, so did I.
But you're not tired?
Of course not. Holy smoke, if a person can't go to without sleep for one night, they must be getting old.
Well, let's face it, Jerry. We are.
Getting old? Oh, nonsense. I never felt better. I feel as young as...
So I see.
That yawn didn't mean a thing.
No,
it didn't. I'm just relaxed. That's all.
Jerry. Darling. Could you manage to relax a little more quietly?
Colgate Chlorophyll Toothpaste destroys bad breath more effectively. Yes, clinical tests prove Colgate Chlorophyll Toothpaste destroys bad breath originating in the mouth more effectively, more thoroughly, and for a longer time than a non-chlorophyll toothpaste. These tests with actual cases, men and women who had unpleasing breath, proved Colgate Chlorophyll's longer-lasting protection. These men and women brushed their teeth just once, and periodic checks were made on each with a breath-measuring device called the osmoscope. Even hours later, Colgate Chlorophyll toothpaste was proved to give far greater reduction of unpleasing breath. Remember, one brushing with Colgate Chlorophyll rids your mouth of a high percentage of decay bacteria. And tests prove a chlorophyll toothpaste can reduce common gum trouble twice as fast as a non-chlorophyll toothpaste. So get the full benefits of a chlorophyll toothpaste. Get fresh-tasting Colgate Chlorophyll toothpaste. Every Tuesday night at this time, the Colgate Palmolive Peat Company, makers of Halo Shampoo to glorify your hair, Colgate Brushless Shaving Cream for tough beards and tender skin, and Colgate Chlorophyll Toothpaste to help destroy unpleasing breath originating in the mouth, bring you Mr. and Mrs. North, transcribed, starring Joseph Curtin and Alice Frost. Be sure to join us again next week when Pam and Jerry encounter an angry mob with blood in its eye and a small-town sheriff with murder in his heart in the mystery, License to Kill. The characters of Mr. and Mrs. North are based on those originally created by Francis and Richard Lockridge. Tonight's script was by Don Brinkley, music by Charles Paul. Mr. and Mrs. North is produced and directed by John W. Lufton. The Colgate Palmolive Peat Company invite you to listen to their exciting new quiz, The Phrase That Pays, on radio every weekday morning, Monday through Friday, and to the new Mr. and Mrs. North program on television. Consult your local newspaper for details. Joe King speaking.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.